Welcome, welcome everyone to the third episode of Don't Be Broke, Be Woke. I'm your host, Adrian Solomon. Very excited that you guys are with us for third episode. This is where it gets fun. This is where it gets exciting. Not that the first two episodes weren't exciting or fun, but this is when we actually get to the fun part, what you guys have probably been waiting for. You know, I talked about in last episode how this was going to be an episode about saving and why savings or saving is important and how saving accounts are just not enough for what we are trying to achieve in regards to financial freedom. So with that said, let's just go ahead and dive in. So as always, I want to really stress out, I know I didn't mention in our previous episode, but anything that I'm going to share with you guys are personal experiences, personal opinions. These are not advice in regards to, you know, what exactly you should do, but these are, you know, thought processes on what I've done. These are just thought processes of what I've done to be successful. And so I just want to share some of that love with you guys. And again, my advice always is to make sure that you're going back and doing your own research and see what actually makes more sense to each individual person. So for today, we want to talk about saving. Why is saving important? Look, when we grow up and, you know, you're 10 years old or 12 and, you know, you get an allowance and you want to buy something, what do? You save that money. You put a little bit of money aside, you find out how much that thing's going to be, and you save it. I know that when I've taken my kids to Chuck E. Cheese, they've gone a couple of times, and they want to buy that big toy, but they need more tickets. What do? They save those tickets. The idea is to save, to get as many tickets as possible so they can come back and get the toy that they wanted, right? How is that any different than saving for a big purchase item like car, wedding, house, vacation, home improvement project? It really does not matter. It's really more so on what you think is important and how you're saving to get to that goal, right? So obviously we know that saving is important. And so we save for a variety of different reasons. One could be you have money for a rainy day, right? So your money's there. If you actually need more money than what you actually have planned to use based on what's on your basic checking account, you have that money available for you to use, right? So that extra cash that you may have put on the side when your regular expenses have been paid and you need a little bit more to take out of, you can take out of your savings account because you've planned for that. So that's kind of like the basics. Secondly, is an emergency fund. So what is an emergency fund? Well, an emergency fund is money saved outside of either your investing money or outside of for a quote unquote small rainy day. An emergency fund is exactly what it sounds like, or exactly what it is. It is really money you're putting aside when you have an emergency and you have no other means to pay for that except tapping into your emergency fund. That emergency fund money should be money that you do not touch until or unless you have an emergency, right? So people say, well, why don't you just invest that money? No, putting money as an emergency fund in the stock market, it's not smart, it's not efficient, and it's really not practical. Because when you put money in the stock market, if you actually need that money today, you're not able to just pull that money out. So you have to sell your positions, wait for it to settle, which can take a couple of days depending on which brokerage accounts you have and where you had your securities, etc., you know, stocks you had, or if it was a mutual fund, all that. And so it's not really practical, nor is it efficient. So you want to have emergency fund. And so you need to determine how much your emergency funds will be. Your emergency fund should be, well, based on kind of what I have done, is 6 to 8 months of expenses if I was no longer getting an income, right? So that's my emergency fund. So many different people will tell you 2 years, 12 months, like, you know, whatever the case may be. And every person and their situations are very different, and you should approach yours if very specific to you. 2 months of an emergency fund could be fine if you're someone that, you know you're going to get a job, your wife has that income, and you know, whatever. Everyone's situation is very different. And so because of that, your emergency fund, how much money you have in there, is different in your situation. In my case, I have 6 months of living expenses in my emergency fund. And those 6 months of emergency fund expenses would allow me to actually use that money, and only that money, to pay my mortgage, my car payments, my car insurance, my utility bills, my grocery amounts, any basic necessities that I have would be used to pay in my emergency fund, right? So you can make your emergency fund however you need it to be, but guys, you need, like, everybody, especially as you start going to college, you graduate college, you rent, you have a house, you have car payment, you need an emergency fund savings account, or at least a savings that actually have an emergency fund in it. Outside of that, you have savings necessary to, I guess, almost be, I don't want to say a parachute, but almost be a protection if the stock market crashes. And this would be something that we would discuss in another episode when we discuss kind of, you know, how much money you have, asset allocations, et cetera, et cetera. But you, just like I was using that example a little bit ago about not having emergency fund money tied in the stock market, you don't want to have all of your cash tied to the stock market. You can, and that's clearly a gamble, but if for any reason the stock market crashes and there's a huge crash that typically lasts anywhere between 12 and 16 months and your money actually drops, right? What you do not want to do, is pull your money out of your brokerage account when that happens. And so you want to be able to have money in the savings account. This could be a separate emergency fund money. It could be. Now, let me just preface by saying that this example of having cash on the side outside from a stock market crash is really more focused, guys, on my retiring early type of folks, right? Folks who will depend on their brokerage account, their stocks, etc., to actually survive after retirement. Those guys would actually need that kind of cash on the side because their brokerage account is their livelihood. Their brokerage account, where they have all their money, where they have all their stocks, etc., is basically their income, so to speak. And so they don't want to have to go dip in an account that's actually losing value because of a crash. And so they should have, and I say they meaning my early retirement people, my 40, 45, even 50 year old people, they should have an even bigger emergency fund that's basically there to cover maybe 2 years of expenses or less, depending on, you know, your situation, etc. So I know emergency funds, stock market crash, sounds like the same. It is not. And I'm sorry I didn't make that distinction. But, you know, your emergency fund is every single human being should have an emergency fund. And if you are someone who is going to retire early and you're going to depend on your actual stock brokerage account to be the account that's going to basically give you your income, if for any reason the stock market crashes, you need to make sure that you have enough money outside of that account to cover your expenses that you can dip on and use that money for rent, et cetera, et cetera. The idea is to never touch your brokerage account, specifically when there's a stock market crash, because you're actually pulling money out when there's a down. When in reality, you either should put more money in or leave it as it is, right? The idea is really to sell high. If anything, is to sell when the stock market is going high, pull some profits out, etc. Again, I'm going out of context for a future episode. I know I say that a lot, but there's really so much content in regards to the so many different avenues we can go when it comes to saving, making money, and investing, etc. And then lastly, a budget. And probably scratching your head and say, what? A saving, like I just mentioned in a previous episode, saving should be part of your budget. Like when you budget and you're like, mortgage, cell phone, Netflix, car payment, savings. Like you should have a row for saving. Every month, every other week, however you get paid, you should automatically be putting money in your savings account. Okay? It is imperative that you do that before you pay any other bill. Why is that important? It's important because here's how most people do it. They make a budget, they figure things out, and if at the end they have $700 left, they didn't decide, ooh, I can only save 50 bucks a month this month. The next month, ooh, maybe I only save 25. You know what? The next month, I can't save anything, but I'll save double the next month around. No. I mean, you should not leave you saving money to after the fact. You should basically start saving automatically. So you can do a couple of things. You can automatically put your deposit going to a savings account or an IRA or whatever. Or you can do automatic transfers when you get paid, which is what I do. Once I get paid, the day I get paid, which is pretty much every other Friday, I have an automatic transfer from my main bank account where my deposit goes into a savings account. And believe it, it is actually not a savings account tied to my actual bank because in essence, I really don't want to see it. I just want it to go somewhere and I don't really remember that it really exists until and if I need it, right? Again, it all depends on the type of savings. I have multiple avenues of savings. So if you want to just save and move money from your banking checking account to your savings within the same bank, you can do that very easy. You separate it so that the money in your checking can be used to pay what you need to pay. And of course, as I mentioned before, if something happens where you're short, you can always move money around from your savings to your checking. But the emergency fund money, your investing money, all that should automatically go somewhere in which you don't have visibility so that it can actually sit and not be at your fingertips, because that tends to, you know, drive negative behavior like transfer money back, use it, etc. So we've kind of gotten that out of the way as far as why we think saving is important. Those are all kind of does. Now, what types of savings should we basically be talking about, right? So let's dive into the most popular one, which is kind of a savings account. So savings accounts are great, right? They are a quick, easy way for you to set up an account to put money in it in order for it to be saved, right? Saved, saving account. However, if all your money is in a savings account, then you're failing and you're failing hard. Because if you have your emergency fund in a savings account, great. Your rainy day money in a savings account, great. But your retirement savings account should not be in there. Matter of fact, your house money, your wedding potential money, your, you know, college saving money, those should be in accounts that are growing money on top of your money. Okay? And that is not a savings account. And some of you might say, well, savings account have interest rates that grow. Sure they do. But the national average for a savings account is 0.05-ish, if I'm not mistaken. And so most banks' savings accounts are not going to give you the yield necessary to have legitimate returns. They're just not. Sure, putting your wedding money or down payment money into a brokerage account can seem more risky. But is it? Is it? Because a brokerage account where you put your money in a mutual fund is going to grow. It is going to grow. One way or another, it will grow. If it follows a specific index, and we'll get into that, your money will grow. It will grow faster, that's for sure. The savings account, it will never really go down. That you can guarantee yourself of that. But to me, It's almost like putting your money under a mattress. Look, my hands are up. I'm saying almost. I understand it's not the same. It's a lot more protected, etc. But I have an issue with $1,000 sitting somewhere and growing by cents month by month. That doesn't do it for me. And it shouldn't do it for you either. Unless, again, it's an account that you know that, you know, it's emergency and all that stuff, and you need to be able to pull it out whenever you need, like I just mentioned. So there are some savings accounts. I think a lot of the high yield savings accounts that exist today have anywhere between 0.5, 0.8, you know, yield. And I think that there's Varo savings account, V-A-R-O savings account. Last I checked, they had a 1.2 annual percentage yield, which is great from a savings account perspective. Like, awesome. To me, this is an account you put your emergency funds in. This is the money where you put in, you know, like if there's a stock market crash, etc. That is where you put your money, right? However, that is not where you put your money for retirement. That is not where you put your money for your college tuition, for your kids' college tuition. If you're buying a house in 5 years, it is definitely not where you put your money for your house. You know, wedding, it depends how soon you're getting married. And we'll get into, like, you know, do you pay cash or not cash, et cetera, for a wedding. But a savings account is just not enough. What is enough? What actually makes the difference? Well, there are two accounts that are savings account in the sense of what they're doing, but they're not called savings account. One is a brokerage account. Your brokerage account is an account that you would open with Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard, TD Ameritrade, SoFi. You can even open it with your bank, both Ally, JP Morgan, Bank of America. They all have it. And you can open this brokerage account. Usually takes less than 10 minutes. And you use that account to trade, right? You can buy stocks, sell stock, buy specific index funds, sell index funds, whichever the case may be. However, that account can be used as a way to grow your money because you can put $10,000 in that account, buy a specific index fund. Let's just say it's the S&P 500 ETF, ticker SPY. And leave it there. And if you had $10,000, if you had $20,000, you could do this kind of simple, I don't say simple math, but you could basically say, okay, if I put $10,000 in the savings account and $10,000 in the SPY, go. Well, after a year, let's just say you're putting it in a high interest savings account with a 1% APY for 1% yield. That savings balance that you had, which of $10,000, would earn somewhere around $100 after the year. It's not bad. It is not bad, right? But if you take that same $10,000 that you put into your brokerage account and bought $10,000 worth of the SPY index fund or ETF, which basically tracks the S&P 500, which is the top 500 companies and the S&P, your return would be somewhere between 7 to 9%, depending on the year. So $10,800, $10,100, which way are you going with? Now, what's interesting, or what's kind of obvious, is that throughout the year, that ETF index fund that you have, it might go down, it might go up, it might go down, it might go up. But in theory, after the year, hopefully, you get an 8% return back. Might be less, maybe, depending on the year. Might be even higher. Depends. With your high interest savings account, you're at 1%. Now, depending on what's actually happening with interest rates and how the Fed has the interest rate, like right now, that actually might go down even more, right? Who knows, right? The idea, though, is clearly you're not going to get more bang for your buck on a savings account. Not for when that money is going to sit there. If you're going to retire and you think you're going to put your money in a savings account, you're never going to get the money necessary in order for you to retire comfortably. If you're going to buy a house in 10 years and you put $10,000 as an initial payment in there, and every year you want to put $1,000, sure, in 10 years you're going to have a lot more. You'll have another $10,000. So you'll have $20,000 plus the 1% interest that might be growing on top of that. But think about that from the aspect of putting it in an index fund. Compound interest, bling, bling, bling. By the way, compound interest would work on a high interest savings account also. It'll just be 1%. I'm not poo-pooing the high interest savings account. Like, don't ever use it. Shoot, if you're getting a savings account, go with a high interest savings account. If your bank is offering you a savings account and it's not high interest, don't do it. You can actually have a checking account with a bank and have a savings account with another bank. I do it. Plenty of people do it. You have to take advantage of the products that are out there for you. And sometimes people, because it's not easy, people don't do it. It is easy. It is very easy. It's easy to transfer money. There's Zelle now. There's all these other platforms. It is not that difficult. And so having a high interest savings account is definitely a thing for you to do. Rainy day emergency fund. But anything else, your money should be in a brokerage account. And with that, the last piece of investing when it comes to long term is a company assisted retirement account, which is typically a 401k or 403b. Sometimes it could be TSP, I think it is, depending on if you work for the federal government. It's basically pre-tax money taken out of your payroll as a payroll deduction, pre-tax, that goes directly into this retirement account, which is typically called a 401k. I mean, first of all, guys, if you work at a company that offers a 401k, typically they sign you up automatically. But if they don't and you don't sign up, or if they do, you don't go in and make proper contributions, you are failing. Okay? One of the greatest advantages of working is a company that's providing you an actual income source in retirement through a 401k. Okay? Different companies do it different ways. Some companies actually match a certain percentage. So, you know, some companies match 4, 5, 6%. So, like, in that case, why don't you do 6% contribution? That's 12% that is going into your 401k. 6 coming from you, 6 coming from your employer, right? 6 coming from your check, payroll, 6 your employer is basically giving to match what you're doing. Do it. What's cool about that too is if you basically do 6% pre-tax, it lowers your tax bracket and so you pay less taxes, right? It all works out. It is great to do. Great to do. A 401k should be, well, I know it's mandatory in most places, like most companies will sign you up automatically, but it is should be in today's environment, every company should offer a 401k. The government should help companies offer 401k because it is an avenue to help people save money to retire. Not a savings account, but a company-assisted retirement account, such as a 401k, is another wonder, in my opinion. And not enough people take advantage of it. And even if they are, some of them don't actually understand how it works. I will have another episode specifically talking about 401k, how it works, how you can make your contributions, elections to specific investment within that portfolio, and what makes a 401k so great. You are putting money pre-tax into a retirement account that cannot be touched until you are ready to retire, which is about 62-ish or 65, depending on the between 401k, IRAs, Roth IRAs, traditional IRAs, HSAs. All those have different ages in which you can take the money out. Sometimes I get a little confused. So always read up and understand when you can actually take money out of retirement without any penalty. But that is one benefit, right? You cannot touch it. Sure, you can pull money out, but it's never something you should be doing. Don't take it out. It's untouchable. Untouchable. Let that money sit. The second piece of why it's important It's sitting and it's growing. And it's growing exponentially year after year because of compound interest. Compound interest. Yep, here I am talking about that again. Why is that important? Every year you're making contribution, every year that account is getting some returns for you. Those returns are deposited or put right back into your account. That portfolio is also creating dividends. Those dividends, which is companies paying shareholders for having their stock, is going right back in your portfolio and reinvested. And every month, you're making the same deposit, which is creating cost dollar averages because you're putting the same exact amount every month and the same portfolio. So either the stock is up or down, you're putting the exact same amount. And so you're growing your portfolio exponentially over time, right? And it is the account that in theory, when you are ready to retire, could be the account that sustain you in your later life, okay? And I use the word later because not early in the retirement part, but later in life. And that all really depends on when you retire. So I know I talked about the types of savings and we talked about regular savings, brokerage, 401k. They're all very important. And in reality, you should have all three. All three. And there are others. But those are the basics. Those are the most popular. Those are the accounts that would in turn help you get to a point in where you're going to retire. And lastly, it is really never too late to start saving. I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast that it hit me like a ton of bricks that I wasn't ready to retire at 50 if I wanted to. I wasn't ready. But it is never really too late. Now I have a 401k, and that 401k should, if I continue to make the same contributions or I increase my contributions yearly, in a perfect world where I stay with the same company, or even if I move companies and I take that 401k and roll it over and I make the same contributions, should give me enough money to retire comfortably when I do. In addition, I have saved and continued to save, started saving in the past 3 to 4 years. I wasn't ready before. I didn't have that type of savings. And what's funny is that I saved money and I paid for a wedding cash. And my wife, she didn't really want a big wedding, but I'm from the Caribbean and, you know, she's from the Caribbean. Matter of fact, we're both from the island of Hispaniola and we wanted to have a party. So I paid for my wedding in cash and I don't regret marrying my wife, but I regret having the wedding. I regret spending that money on the wedding. Because it could have been used elsewhere. That money could have been part of my retirement money. I saved and bought my house, which was fine. This is an investment. This is an asset that I have. But it is never too late to start saving. Now, the later you wait, the more you have to save yearly. So if you're 21, 22, 23, 24 listening to this, you can start very low, very small, and every year increase your savings percentage. But if you start at 40, then you can't start small unless you want to retire at 70. But you have to basically start big and continue to increase it in order to get you to the point where you can retire with a reasonable amount when that time comes. So I know today's episode was kind of intense with the different savings and, you know, why they're important and what type of savings we could do. But I think it's important for us to understand that savings is just, it's more than just putting money on a savings account and wait for it to be there. We can be better as a society if we actually start saving early and save differently. And I'll end with this. In America specifically, we are obsessed with living by like almost like a code. We grow up, we go to school, then we have to go to college, then you have to potentially get married, then you go to work, you have to have kids, and then you've got to retire and all this thing. And so that our lives is dominated by this process in which we live. And the problem is we get so busy and so enamored by the day to day, then we kind of forget. And then we start stressing about what happens when this is over. What happens when the kids leave? Which sometimes why divorces are high when kids leave, because the parents are just so used to basically grinding through this lifestyle. They don't know. Oh my God, I never looked out for me. I looked out for my kids, but what about me? What happens with me? No one really looked at that. What if you started thinking about you before you got married and had kids? It removes the stress of thinking about it so often. And most importantly, it removes the actual surprise when you're 40 years old and you're like, oh crap, I have to retire in 20 years. Where am I money coming from? How will I live in retirement? For us in our late 30s, 40s, mid-40s, oh crap, red alert, let's get on it. If you're in your early 20s, mid-20s, late 20s, even early 30s, you have time, my friend. You have time. And time is what will make or break your ability to have more money when it comes time to retire. So with that said, my friends, thank you again for listening to the third episode of Don't Be Broke, Be Woke. Next episode, we're really going to dive into the world of investing and why investing should be what everyone do all the time.